With the UFC headed back to Nashville this weekend for the first time since 2019, it's time to dig into the Music City return. Dueling action stars Corey Sandhagen and Rob Font battle it out in the main event. And with one half of the Allen Brothers away, let's get into it.
Oh boy, and just like that, I am back and looking forward to UFC Fight Night Sandhagen versus Font. As always, one half of your hosting duo, Craig Allen, Twitter and Instagram, or is it at X and Instagram, at Craig Allen, FNP. And look at that, we're back. We're live. The sound looks good. I guess the sound sounds good. The picture looks good. I can see myself over there. We're not dropping frames. The encoding's not overloaded. It's not the hottest day you've ever seen on a Saturday. Getting ready for Fight Night Picks ? But in this and in today's show, I mean, as you know, you got the country theme. I got all kinds of records next to me. What about Just Say Charlie? I mean, just plain Charlie. Charlie Pride. I mean, that had me and Bobby McGee when everybody in the early 70s was doing a cover of that until Janis Joplin really hit a home run with it. But going back to Nashville for the first time since 2019, and if you saw that opening clip, everybody's saying, is this live? Yeah, it's live. And it's going to be a little bit difficult. Matt away on vacation, as we know. He's living it up. You can find him on Instagram at MattAllenFNP. But when we do look at this card, first time at, Bridgestone Arena in Nashville since 2019. Wonderboy taking on Anthony Pettis, that crazy Superman punch. It gets it done for Anthony Pettis. You might not remember the co-main event on that card. Al Iaquinta taking on Diego Sanchez. And then before that, Cub Swanson taking on Artem Lobov. So a lot of really big fight cards. That was the Iaquinta Sanchez card. A lot to look forward to. Lord Nikon's hanging out in the chat. Kurtar, Mac, Swollen in Control, Chef Chris. We got Reiki. We've got Kay Gee as well. So a lot to look forward to again on this card. I mean, overall, you combine these two guys in the main event. Four fight of the nights between them. 10 total bonuses between them. Corey Sandhagen, a split decision win his last time out, and there's a lot to say about that decision. But he got it done against Marlon Vera. Rob Font taking this fight on short notice, replacing Umar Nurmagomedov. And Font's last time out, everybody slept on him when he took on Adrian Yanez. And Font was able to get it done in that matchup. Gets that first round TKO win. So awesome stuff to see there for Font. A great opportunity for both these guys. This is, of course, a catchweight fight at 140 pounds. And listen, there's always symbolism. I'm not calling myself the prop king of MMA if, you know, I'm just wearing a Blue Jays jersey for fun. Because listen, this is just me. I'm going solo today. I'm managing the team like Charlie Montoyo, a real Charlie Montoyo jersey. I'm probably the only one that has that. I got the water bottle today. Looking forward to it. The Jays got a win today. But why am I doing things like this? Why am I getting ready for a show this way? Well, it's because you see the flag behind me. I mean, it is a card that has some Canadians on it. And we always get excited about the Canadians, right? Like, you guys absolutely love it when Canadians fight on these cards.
But if there's two Canadians on the card, doesn't that usually make for a big time success?
I don't know where that came from, but it usually does. I mean, UFC 289 in Vancouver, everybody loved it. Canadians on top of the world. It was awesome. It was amazing. And then all of a sudden it got a little bit dicey. And when we look at a card like this, you have the return of Gavin Tucker out of the East Coast. You've got kind of a Western guy out of Alberta in Tanner Boser. A lot to look forward to there as well.
But they're stars, right?
Yeah. Guy in the room, they're stars. But overall, it's going to be really difficult. Boser's taking on Alexa Kammer. That's that second fight at light heavyweight in the OC for Tanner Boser. Last time out, gets beaten by Iwan Kutsalaba. And if you look at it for Gavin Tucker, years away from the sport, injuries, he's 37. So we'll see how he's able to adjust in this ever-changing landscape of a big-time division. MPTV, did you and Matt get into it? What did you say to him? No, I said enjoy your vacation, my guy. But yeah, I mean, overall, an awesome, awesome show. Max looking forward to it. We have so many fights to go over. So listen, enjoy it there. Lord Nikon, liking the record. Lord Nikon, man, if you like the record that's right there, From the Head by the Mummy Cats, that's the record that I'm in their music video for. So make sure you check that one out. The song Wolverine by those guys, it's always a part of the set. That was actually really fun to do. So thanks for pointing that one out. We have 12 total fights to look forward to. Not a lot of ranked opponents on this one. There's only five, but the debut of one Asu Mabayev. You can look forward to that. He's taking on Ode Osborne. We also have Dennis Bazukia on short notice. So a lot to cover today. A lot of these fights to go over. listen, you're going to want to keep it locked in with Fight and Apex. And as we always say, let's get into it. Wham bam, thank you, ma'am. Look at that. It's a new look here at Fight and Apex. We're getting set for the first fight on this card. This one at flyweight. O'Day, 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 O'Day. If you got a call for it, it's not that great. But this is an O'Day Osborne card. It's not a Conor McGregor card. And he's taking on Kazakhstan's Asu Almabayev. And you might see Asu Almabayev's name spelled all sorts of different ways. When he was with Brave, when he was with the different promotions, it was spelled the way that I have it there on screen. With the UFC, they're going A-S-S-U. Almabayev with a Y hidden in there. So look out for that when you are looking for his fights, but an absolute pleasure to watch. And when you consider Almabayev's fights and you go looking for them, you might sit there and scratch your head. You might think, hey, is this deja vu? This is Groundhog Day? Didn't I already see a guy out of Kazakhstan at flyweight with a crazy record debut recently? Yeah, you're not wrong, and you're not in a dream. Asu Almabayev following in the footsteps of a big, big-time fighter, and we did have recently a fight where Tyson Am loses by split decision, and it was a crazy, crazy controversy in that one. But if you look at that, he was taking on Azat Maxim, the undefeated Kazakhstan fighter, 16-0, the champ with Octagon, and that's not the one that's up at the World MMA Awards for top promotion. It's spelled with a C and not a K. But if you look at both of these guys, Almabayev, you've got fighters out of Kazakhstan just absolutely at the forefront of MMA, and Almabayev's been in the corner of Shavkat Rakhmonov, but not unlike Azat Maxim. I mean, taking on a similar level of competition. Not to mention as well, Tyson Am had that crazy win over O'Day Osborne. Tyson Am in the UFC at the time was 3-4. O'Day Osborne in this fight, 4-3. So 7 fights worth of experience to make your debut. But for Asu Almabayev, former M1 Global interim flyweight champ, he had that win over Chris Kalaitis. I mean, a guy at a Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia. You were always cheering for him. He had a cup of coffee over with Bellator, some time in the UFC as well. A big upset win over Paddy Holahan way back in the day. Almabayev got it done there. He's on a very impressive win streak, and we can really kind of go over that when we have a look at it. Out of Killcliffe FC, kind of cross training there. Again, spending time with Shavkat Rakhmonov. We saw him corner him in the UFC, but also Nick Lentz, the coach there, and so on and so forth. Shumagulov spent time there as well. Lord Nikon worried about weight missing though on this one, possibly with O'Day Osborne. Ra Torque saying O'Day, and Chef Chris saying Asu. But when you do consider a fight like this for Asu Almabayev, before you come into the UFC, if you've taken on the level of competition like he has, it kind of makes you perk up a little bit. And there's a lot of fights that you can go back and watch. They're very readily available for Almabayev. I mean, he went 2-1 with AMC Fight Nights Global, 3-0 with M1, ended up as their interim flyweight champ. And we were all excited when the UFC and M1 kind of started to merge. And you had those big M1 champs coming over. You had guys like Movsar Evloev. You had Sergey Morozov. You had, Nate Landwehr was a champ over there. And it just continued and continued. Shavkat Rakhmonov. Almabayev didn't get the call, but Alexander Deskalchuk did get the call. And he was due a couple of different fights in the UFC. One against Tagiro Lambekov, one against Malcolm Gordon. They didn't happen. So you had a really long layoff for Deskalchuk, who was that guy at 125 with M1 Global. And who does he fight with Brave CF? It was like a unification of the belts from their time with M1 Global. He fights Asu Almabayev. And you see an early takedown attempt from Deskalchuk, a guy I thought really high of when he fought with M1. Almabayev pulls guillotine once, pulls guillotine twice. It looks so tight, it looks like it's over. Almabayev scrambles out of position. He gets back up. He gets the takedowns, and he submits Alexander Deskalchuk. And listen, no odds, no this, no that, but it was a giant upset. And that was the 2021 Brave CF Breakthrough Fighter of the Year was Almabayev. He also won Submission of the Year for that win. So when you do look at both these guys and their skill sets, I already mentioned O'Day Osborne. Listen, he's had 7 fights inside of the UFC. The debut was against Brian Kelleher. It didn't necessarily go his way. But the thing that I found really interesting when I did the research on O'Day Osborne, performance of the night bonus over Zuruk Adashev, you know that the power's there. He's a tricky sidewinder as it stands. And Almabayev's fought a southpaw not that long ago, another UFC vet. in fun-size Zach Makovsky, and he wins that fight by split decision. But the reason I bring that fight up is southpaw and southpaw can be tricky for some of these orthodox fighters like Almabayev. And Almabayev's one of those guys that aim big, miss big, and if he's not able to get his striking going, he leaves himself wide open for the counters. Makovsky was very successful with the striking. However, for Almabayev, it really is his takedowns that butter his bread. So if you do consider it for a guy like Ode Osborne, I mean, the strike numbers, they kind of are what they are so far in the UFC. It is a negative strike differential, 4.31 to 4.63 absorbed per minute for Osborne. 46% striking defense, it's not the crispest. And if you look at it, 72% takedown defense for Ode Osborne. So some decent numbers there. The one thing that I found really funny on the stat sheet, if you're considering it for a guy like Almabayev, I mean, look at this. One of his opponents that he had taken on the last time out, Almabayev was supposed to headline Brave CF 66. They don't actually have it on his Tapology page, but that fight fell out. He's supposed to take on an awesome fighter out of the Kingdom of Bahrain. That fight, again, did not happen. So they end up putting him up against Magnat. And you can find that fight out there on YouTube. Look at this guy's record. Absolute jobber out of the Philippines. A couple of those little exclamation marks, because those fights, not really all that legit. So a little odd there, but obviously a really good pedigree for Almabayev. The wrestling is intense. He does take long shots. He does kind of ride on the knees, but he typically gets the job done that way. So I think this is going to be a really, really good fight. Again, a good litmus test for a guy in Almabayev to make his debut against an established veteran in Ode Osborne, who his last time out got the split decision win over Charles Johnson. Not a lot of controversy on that. Majority of thought that Osborne got the win in the matchup. But if you do consider this, Almabayev is the slight favorite in the matchup. You and I, you're out there, you're listening in the car, maybe you're on the plane, maybe you're watching here on YouTube. We have a look at the Tapology votes. 1,747 total votes, 76% going with Almabayev. I have Almabayev in the matchup, but again, I think this is going to be an awesome fight. And listen, you could say collusion, but I did ask Matt earlier on today. He is on that big-time European swing of a vacation. Who he had in the fight, and he has Asu Almabayev in this one as well. So both of us at Fight Night Picks going with Kazakhstan's Almabayev to get the win. I think the wrestling's going to be great, but again, watch out, because he leaves himself out there to get countered, as did Azat Maxim. It nearly cost him against Tyson Nam. Majority thought that Tyson Nam won that fight, and then it was all over. So I think this is going to be a great one, but let us know down below in the comment section who you have. The next matchup on the card, I mean, listen, Sean Woodson's had a hard time to get fights, and he's taking on Dennis Bazookia. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it. And just like that, Sean Woodson, he's going to be taking on Steve Garcia. No, that fight's not going to happen. Okay, he's going to take on Jesse Butler. Don't worry about it. We got that card ready for you. We got the video ready. Everything's ready. No, that's not happening. Okay, he's going to take on Myron Santos out of the LFA. Wait, no, that's not going to happen. Okay, all right. So he's going to take on, I'm sure, this guy, you know, Sean Woodson. He's got to take a fight. He used to box at 215. He's looking out for a fight, looking into the crowd. Who's going to take on former boxer Sean Woodson? Well, wouldn't you know, it's Dennis Bazookia, a guy who's been calling from the rooftops for a shot in the UFC since Dana White Contender Series 2020, let alone 2022. So a very, very good shot for Dennis Bazookia here. He accepted this fight on Tuesday night of fight week. So a very, very abbreviated opportunity for Bazookia. But if you know anything about him, I mean, he does have a little bit of a karate background. He does get it done by being such a well-rounded fighter. And we have to tip our cap to Bazookia for that right there. He can get it done with his wrestling. You saw that when he competed on Dana White's Contender Series this past summer. The trouble was for Bazookia, well, Dana White said, be Joe Pyfer. And if you remember anything out of that first episode from this past season of Contender Series, it was be Joe Pyfer. Bazookia gets a win by decision. It wasn't really the most appealing fight to go back and watch, but for Bazookia, it was a good one. It was gritty. He gets a knockdown in the second round. And then if you do consider it and you look at a guy like Sean Woodson, he got dropped twice in his last fight. So a good opportunity for Bazookia in this one. Now, the thing that I see out of Bazookia is, and I added it up, and you never really want to do this, but I did it. you add up the combined opponent record, and it comes up at 60-42-1. He beat, like I said, over on Contender Series, Kelio Romero, who's 6-1. He fought a porous level competition, so it is an inflated 6-1. Overall, the record isn't really the greatest. Now, Baszucki is on a very, very impressive win streak. It's 7 deep. If you look at his fights that he's had after Contender Series from last summer, takes on 9-5, Boma Carmo. He gets the win there. He beats Mark Gregory Valerio, who was 7-7. And then just a little bit over a month ago, he beats Solsan Abakanov over CFFC, who is 6-4-1. So not the greatest level competition of the guys that he's fought recently. However, you go and you look at these performances, you look at the submission win that he has his last time out, and it is filthy. So for Baszucki, a great opportunity. And for Sean Woodson, he's a really interesting case because he's 9-1-1. His last time out against Luis Saldana, that's where it gets Krispy Kreme had to change his name, so Froggy Fresh. Why is James crying? Because he just got dunked on. So if you go back and you watch Sean Woodson's last fight, he's taking on Saldana. What do we know about Luis Saldana? He is lights out in the first round. Second round, third round, But it looked like Saldana turned a corner in that fight. Why? Well, in the first round, he switches from his natural southpaw to orthodox. He lands a left hook. It drops Sean Woodson. And then what does Luis Saldana do? He backs away and waits for Woodson to get up. He doesn't blitz. He doesn't do anything about it. He kind of showboats a little. They get back in the center of the cage. They're in a phone booth. It looks like a jab lands. Woodson falls down. And then following him is Saldana. Now, Woodson kind of brings his head back up. Saldana lands what looks like an illegal knee. Commentary's all over the place. You have referee Mike Beltran. He calls a stoppage to the contest in that first round. And all of a sudden, you've got a point deducted from Luis Saldana. So in the end, they scored that fight 28-28, 29-27 Woodson, and 29-27 Saldana. So it really was a tricky job of the scoring in that one. But for Sean Woodson, he's taken a really long time off. And as I already mentioned, he was supposed to get Jesse Butler. He was supposed to get Myron Santos. He was supposed to get Steve Garcia originally. And now, and I'll bring up the card because I can, you've got a 6'2.5". In terms of height, yeah, they put that half inch in there. It counts. Taking on 5'9". Now, of all those other guys, and I can kind of pop it back up again, Myron Santos, 5'9", 5'10 for Jesse Butler. Steve Garcia is a bigger guy at lightweight, but if you do consider it, Sean Woodson is one of the bigger guys that you're going to find. So I'd really like to know who people are thinking in this fight over in the chat because we're doing this one live. But if you look at it, a lot of really nice wins for Dennis Baszucki, a guy that can target the body, the head. Sean Woodson, we know the variety and the volume. He likes to play a little bit of the Bobby Green shoulder roll game. Woodson's one of those guys, everybody's and their dog are going to try and take him down. And he actually has decent takedown defense in the UFC. But, I mean, Sean Woodson, he does get taken down. It's tested and tested and tested again. Just like you used to see, you know, way, way back when, the Holly Holmes of the world, that's an extreme example. But a lot of these primary boxers, I guess you're going to see it with Amanda Serrano over with PFL. We will see how it goes. But in this one, I mean, for Sean Woodson, great striker range with that big-time reach advantage. He has the experience. He also has the fact that he's had the time away as well to kind of let things settle in, let that brain heal. Because the last time that Woodson fought, it was almost a year ago. So in the matchup, this one, incredibly short notice. Tuesday night it was announced. We're Wednesday night talking about it here with you on the YouTubes. Over on Tapology, 725 total votes, 70% going with Sean Woodson. Matt Allen in this one also going with Sean Woodson, and I am as well. I think Woodson's going to be able to get it done in the matchup, but four opponent changes. The only thing that doesn't give me pause, like a lot of these other short notice ones are, Sean Woodson wasn't due to fight last week, cut the weight, and then had to do a double weight cut. He did get it done. So Max saying, didn't this fight get canceled? If it did get canceled, like all the other ones, the other three that I started the graphics for the first one against Steve Garcia. I followed through with the other ones. Then I'm going to be a little bit sour, but I think this is going to be a really fun fight. MPTV, Dennis Jimenez is super good, but he's going to be a little too little. Woodson used to fight lightweights and middleweights. Again, that Sean Woodson boxing picture is the real McCoy right there. Sean Woodson competing at 215. So both of us in this one going with Sean Woodson. Next matchup, 125 pounds. Flyweight is in fuego. Jake Hadley's taking on one. Oh, Cody Durden, you're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Oh boy, Jake Hadley taking on Cody Nerden. When you consider a fight like this, it's really, really weird for me. And why is it weird for me? Because Jake Hadley was originally supposed to be taking on the 12th ranked fighter in the flyweight division after finishing Malcolm Gordon. I mean, listen, way back when Roy Jones Jr. knocked out Virgil Hill with a body shot, y'all must have forgot. That was on the right-hand side. Jake Hadley did it on the left-hand side, like most people do when they want to attack that liver. And so Hadley gets that win. He's supposed to take on Ulanbekov, a ranked opponent. He doesn't get it. The fight is off. Cody Nerden, on his Tapology page, is booked to take on Bruno Silva. I think it's in September. It is in September. And that fight falls out. So Nerden accepts the short notice fight against Jake Hadley. This one was announced by Cody Nerden, and it was announced back on July the 12th. So a little bit of short notice here for Nerden. But if you look at both of these guys, Hadley, very good boxing. But where did his bread get buttered when he was an EFC champ? Where did Hadley's bread get buttered when he was a Cage Warriors champion? It was, if in doubt, wrestle. And that's going to be the interesting key in this one. And I see it over there in the chat. MPTV, Cody can wrestle, but then he doesn't know what to do next. Peter Shea saying American wrestling is better. Prince Vegeta's son, Craig, missed you, brother. Missed you as well, brother. But when you look at a fight like this, like for Nerden, he went out there and put on a masterclass in game planning against one Charles Johnson's last time out. 11 takedowns on 18 attempts, 9 minutes and 33 seconds of control time. And I wanted to get the quotables because I remembered Cody Nerden said some wild stuff after he beat Charles Johnson. The cardio looked much improved for Nerden. He's on a 3-fight win streak. And I figured he would get a ranked opponent, and he called for a ranked opponent. And then he had a big shout out to American Top Team in Atlanta, Team Lima with Diego and Douglas Lima. So he's always been an ATT guy out of Atlanta. He has cross-trained a little bit down in South Florida. But Nerden, throughout that UFC 148, Chael Sonnen quotable, he did the old, I'm ready for the ranked opponent. He didn't call anybody out. And then he said something about trombone and big stones or whatever it was. So good one there for Cody Nerden. But ultimately for Nerden, he either ragdolls you or you rally back and he accepts a lot of punishment. We've seen that from Nerden so far in the UFC. And if you consider his UFC tenure, 4-2-1, he had that Jimmy Flick early finish loss, the triangle choke. He's called that guy out time and again. He did get finished by Makhachev. But you look at all the wins and you even look at the decision that he had on really short notice up a weight class against leg kick king Chris Gutierrez. That's a draw. Arichi Long rallies back in the third round, but Nerden did great work with his wrestling in the first and the second. JP Bays, he knocks him out. Carlos Mota, the former champ over with the LFA, he drubs him 30-27s. There was a 29-28, and then again, Charles Johnson. So when you do look at this one, I mean, Nerden has that wrestling pedigree, but Jake Hadley's one of those guys. You've seen it out of him, and odds makers really heavily favored him when he made his UFC debut, took on Alon Nascimento, and this is where you can kind of see the path for Cody Nerden. Is Nerden the most top pressure heavy type of wrestler that you're ever going to see? Not necessarily, but for Jake Hadley taking on Alon Nascimento, roundabout a 2-1 favorite in that fight, lose it by decision. Nascimento had, 9 minutes and 27 seconds of control time in that one. Put him in a pretzel, wasn't able to get the submission win in that one. Hadley rallies back, he beats Carlos Candelario, he beats Malcolm Gordon, and we're off to the races. So this fight should be an amazing one. Team Fearless out of the UK for White Kong. Don't like the nickname. Jake Hadley, he is, of course, a southpaw. Southpaw versus southpaw, a different look for a couple of these guys, but I think this is going to be an awesome fight. These two guys, Matt loves it, so if he's watching out there from Europe, hopefully enjoys it. These two guys got that dog in them. They really do. So I think it's going to be an awesome fight. You can see the variety of finishes that these guys have as well. You like that. Nerden's been submitted on 3 occasions in the pro career. And you can go back to the time that Cody Nerden fought in boxing, kickboxing, and MMA all in the same night. The guy's an absolute wild man. And the man is, of course, an NFC vet. So when you do consider this one and you have a look, try and figure out who is favored to get the win in the matchup. It is the former EFC and the former Cage Warriors champ, Jake Hadley. And if we have a look at the Tapology votes, 1,745 total votes. 79% Hadley, 29% by decision, 50% by submission for the 21% that have Cody Nerden to get the win, 83% by decision. Prince Vegeta's son, Cody Stamann versus Cody Nerden. Well, I mean, Cody Stamann's a guy, at 145 pounds now. I don't think those two guys are going to fight. Manny mentioning Hadley is 37% takedown defense in the UFC. As long as Cody doesn't get subbed, takedown all day. All right. If you're going to bring numbers up, you got to be able to explain them. He fought Mitch Raposo on Contender Series. Mitch went 2 of 3 on takedown attempts. He fought Alon Nascimento. He went 2 of 4 takedown attempts. He fought Carlos Candelario. He went 1 of 1. And he also fought Malcolm Gordon, who went 0-0. So again, when you do consider the level of competition, kind of is what it is. And Durden's one of those guys that's going to get after it. We have a look at Matt's pick. Matt in this one going with the underdog, Cody Durden. The fans have Jake Hadley. Again, let me know who you have in the matchup in this one. I think this is going to be a really tough fight. I think Jake Hadley is going to cause problems for Cody Durden on the feet. And again, Durden's one of those guys with that motor. If he's able to get the takedown, it could be a very early night. And if he's able to go back to it like he was his last time out against Charles Johnson, it could be a really, really hard night. So I'm eager to see what these two guys look like on Friday at weigh-ins. This could very well be a question mark kick, switch them up of the pick, because it really is a close fight. But for now, going with White Kong, Jake Hadley, Matt going with Cody Durden in the matchup. We have some awesome fights on this card. The next one should not be buried on the prelims. The next one is Billy Quarantillo taking on Damon Jackson. You're not going to want to miss any of it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Billy Quarantillo is taking on Action Jackson, Damon Jackson, an awesome fight at 145. And the craziest part about this fight is for Billy Q, his last time out, he gets hit by a short shot, hit by the knee, and it's all over. Edson Barboza finishes him. That was in April. It was not long ago. It was about 4 months ago. Damon Jackson, everybody and their dog had Damon Jackson to the tune of, what was it here? It was a very large percentage nonetheless. Damon Jackson was favored his last time out to get the win, and he didn't get the win. He didn't get it done whatsoever. He lost to Dan Ige, second round knockout loss, and that was Ige falling from the rankings, taking on a guy just on the fringes. Damon Jackson fighting up. He had that awesome front kick to then TKO win against Pat Sabatini his fight before. And if you look at it for Billy Q, he's kind of had his ups and downs. But both of these guys with some bonuses in the UFC. Billy Q with that crazy fight of the night against Mowgli Benitez where they both get dropped. But it's Billy having the last laugh. He's got a performance bonus as well. And if you do consider it for Billy, when he's on, he's on. I mean, look at his rally against Cam Wallace-Kirk on Dana White's Contender Series. That really did light the fire. Billy's 5-2 in the, or sorry, 5-3 in the UFC. He's 3-3 in his last six. However, it's going to be really interesting to see how he manages against some of these guys, because these two guys, even though they both lost their last fight, it was convincingly. It was in the first round. It was by knockout. Well, I guess Damon Jackson was second round, but you catch my drift here. Both pretty bad losses. They have a good opportunity to rebound really, really close to the rankings. And you have a lot of fighters in this category at 145. You have Charles Jourdain that's kind of hanging around. Nathaniel Wood, who got the win over Andre Feely. I mean, there's a lot of guys. Like, I always think of Bill Algio, Joe Anderson Brito. This division is absolutely stacked. So one of these guys needs good opportunity to get a win. Now, if you consider it, the All-American, and he was out of, what was it, Missouri Valley College. In wrestling, that's Damon Jackson. Does he have the pedigree of a jiu-jitsu black belt like Billy Q? No. But in MMA, you see all those submission wins for Action Jackson. So we can bring him up right here. You see it. 15 submission wins for Jackson. He's got that really long, rangy style. But at the same time, he likes to fight in a phone booth and he doesn't use the range. So it really is a trick on the mind where Jackson utilizes his kicks to establish a little bit of the range. But he's one of those guys that he'll throw the punch out and he'll shell up and, you know, we'll get into a phone booth and he really can't rip back. So I'll be interested to see who's able to get it done from, you know, the standing positions. And with Billy Q, you look at his performance bonus just a few fights ago. Hernandez drops down from 155 to 145. Billy looks like the best version we've ever seen. And then Billy's favored to get the win against Edson Barboza. So a very interesting fight there. Tyson over in the chat saying Edson timed that so well. He didn't even need to look down to see if the knee was going to connect. Night Force, Billy TKO or Jackson by sub. Raw Torque saying Billy Q with the thumbs up. But I'd like to get an idea from you guys, like, how you see this one going, because it really is a tough one at the end of the day. So this is where we'll get a little bit squirrely. Matt on this one is going with Billy Q to get the win in the fight. I think it can be, this could be a fight of the night if it does last, like Billy Q was against Gabriel Benitez. You look at the fight that he had against Gavin Tucker, and he was just outmatched that one. Tucker had it with the boxing. Tucker had it with the grappling. That was the best version of Gavin Tucker, other than the Sam Cecilia fight that we've seen in the UFC, and I reference that as a little bit of a nugget for later on, the return of Gavin Tucker against Diego Lopez. Damon Jackson was on that crazy win streak. His performance bonus in the return to the UFC after a stint, he was with the LFA, with the PFL, so on and so forth. Jackson gets taken down. Huge comeback win against Mirsad Bektic. Billy Q is favored in the matchup over on Tapology. 810 total votes, 72% Quarantillo, 61% by knockout. For the 28% that have Jackson, 52% by decision, 21% by submission. For me, this really is a tricky fight. I do like the volume out of a guy in Billy Quarantillo in a matchup like this, but Billy Q, I mean, the striking defense isn't necessarily the best. 7.86 significant strikes landed per minute in the 8 fights that Billy Q's had in the UFC to 5.79 absorbed per minute. But he has a 40% strike defense, and he has a 58% takedown defense. So not the best if you do consider it. And for Action Jackson, I mean, the last two losses being Dan Ige and Ilya Topuria, those two guys are top flight competition. But what do they do to get the win? They were able to back up, move around on the feet, and utilize really good boxing. So we'll see how both these two guys can make out. Jackson, too, you look at some of the rallies that he's had throughout his career. I think of his wild fight against Charles Rosa. That was an awesome one. The Dan Argueta fight was just a battle of attrition where he's able to get the back but wasn't able to get the sub. So this should be a really fun fight while it lasts. But both of us, myself and Matt, going with Billy Q to get the win in the matchup. The next fight that's on the card, Jeremiah Wells taking on Carlston Harris. An awesome fight at 170 between a couple of scrappy veterans. You're not going to want to miss any of it. Keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks. We always say, let's get into it. All right, so at 170 pounds, this is a tough fight. And why is it a tough fight? Well, for Carlston Harris, if we're just talking wins and losses inside of the UFC's octagon, well, Harris is kind of a new entrant. You saw him over there plying his trade with multiple different promotions. XFC, I showed a picture of that fight where he took on Michel Pereira. He got the win there. He had a fight with Immortal FC back in Immortal FC 6 against Wellington Turman. I threw a picture of that fight up a few weeks ago. And so you've seen him beat these UFC caliber fighters, Jolton Luderbach as well. Outside of the UFC, Carlston Harris was that guy. Now, he beat Carl Booth, who was a guy that got it done with Brave, with Cage Warriors, kind of all over the place. And then he loses to Jarrah Hussein Al-Salawi, the champ over with Brave. That was back in 2018. For Carlston Harris, title shot, it's not realized. Al-Salawi ends up with PFL years later. And so what does Harris do? Just wins and wins and wins. And everybody kind of got familiarized with him on Dana White's looking at FWD for a fight. I'm going to let that sink in. FWD to a fight. Dana White's FWD to a fight. And Harris gets the win over Sagid Isakakmeyev. And so he gets the contract. He's in the UFC. And Harris goes on the run that he's on. He beats Imp Kasanganai. He beats Christian Aguilera. He beats Jared Gooden, who came in on incredibly short notice for Abubakar Nurmagomedov. Knock, knock, knocking on the UFC's door. Jared Gooden, bring me back. I would like to fight again. And Gooden missed weight in that fight. And it was not a Gooden look for Jared Gooden. And of course, there was a battle of words that ensued here on our YouTube channel and Twitter with old Dan, best fight picks, and it was all water under the bridge at the end of it. But Gooden came in at 177 for that one. But we can't forget that loss that Harris had, the spinning wheel kick against the chosen one, Shavkat Rakhmonov. So Harris looking to get it done. Now, I'm eager to see, because Harris is one of those guys that likes to defend takedowns very well. Active, fast hips for an older gentleman at 170, but he's got great front chokes and he's got great jiu-jitsu. When you have a look at Jeremiah Wells, everybody making fun of Matt taking vacation, look at the guy's Instagram. He's actually on vacation. The craziest part about it is, too, there's been a lot of people that have been hired on us taking vacation, moving some of our production schedules around. We've never done this. And we've been doing this since 2018. So it's been a fun summer, and you only get one chance. So you got to do vacations every now and again. So check out his Instagram at Matt Allen FMP. He's living it up in Europe. Now, for Harris taking on Jeremiah Wells, the former CFFC champ, Jeremiah has shown that some of these CFFC guys, like Basil Hafez, if you've got some and they fought each other, so that's kind of the crazy part about it too. If you look at a guy like Jeremiah Wells, the wrestling's on point. You saw it when he took on Blood Diamond and the controller just kind of shut off and he didn't know what he was doing and he ran into the cage and then he got it done. Jeremiah Wells is a guy that if for strength, for wrestling, for striking alone, if you just isolate all of his skills, they're all very, very good. It's just sometimes they don't always go together the best. Now, he gets the win over Blood Diamond. He finishes the notoriously hard to finish Court McGee. McGee hadn't been finished since what? Wasn't it, It was years and years and years ago. I'll go back to it. Listen, we're doing this one live. I can't cut anything out. But Court McGee hadn't lost by finish. I think it was the fight against Ponzinibbio. It was the fight against Ponzinibbio way back in 2016. So he went forever without getting finished. And then he ended up getting finished by Jeremiah Wells. And then, of course, Matt Brown. But if you do consider it for a guy like Wells, his last time out, he gets dropped by Matt Semelsberger a couple of times. Wells wrestling gets him through, and then he wins a split decision. And the judging criteria is really weird. And when you do look at judging, I mean, I saw it out there today in some of the media clips. Like, Corey Sandhagen had to address judging. And you've obviously got those ABC meetings that are going on right now. I see it a lot from Eric McCracken over on Twitter. Nick Diaz was there. Dan Tom's there. A lot of really important people. So hopefully there's a lot of conversation around not just fighter health and so on and so forth, but the judging and the judging criteria as well. But when you look at a fight like this, Jeremiah Wells, awesome wrestling. But we'll see how it plays out in a fight like this, because I think Carlson Harris, the shiftier striker, have him listed as orthodox and Wells as switch, but I mean, the kicks out of Harris, you got to watch out for those. He has his own takedowns. He's got great jiu-jitsu. I mean, you look at the losses for these two guys. Harris has been chinned a couple of times, but the last time we saw that against Shavkat Rakhmonov, top man. And I thought Jarrah Hussein Al-Salai was going to go on a pretty darn good run with PFL. It just hasn't necessarily happened. So a tricky fight in this one. The big-time win streak on the line, going back to his fight against Vinicius De Jesus, the CES 55 main event in 2019. For Jeremiah Wells, he lost that one by decision. And for Carlson Harris, his last time out, got that win against the short-notice man, Jared Gooden. We have a look over at the Tapology votes. Surprise us there to you. 739 total votes, 83% Wells. Large proportion having to win by knockout, 67% by knockout for the 17% that have Harris, 34% by knockout, and 21% by submission. Wells is favored in the fight. Lord Nikon saying, my head says Wells, but my heart also says Wells. Prince Vegeta-san, when did get any takedown to the end of the round, not counting the three takedown. We're going really hard into it. Manny Maniac, I like both fighters, but Harris, I feel, is a little sloppy with his striking. Got the more well-rounded fighter in Jeremiah Wells. Matt in this one going with Carlston Harris to get the win in the matchup. Matt's got Carlston Harris in this one, and I don't want to be a contrarian and labeled as such by the internet, but for me in this one, I'm going to go with Jeremiah Wells. He has to watch out for those submissions, but he trains at Marquez MMA with some of the best in the world. You look at it, the Sean Brady's, the B.J. Pfeiffer's, a litany of guys from the 170 mark up to 185 and so on. For me, I like Wells in the fight, but Matt does have Carlson Harris, so we're split on the pick in this one, and we move it forward. Again, you talk about fights that could be on the main card. Kyler Phillips coming back, taking on Jaime Barcelos, my guy. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it. All right, so Kyler Phillips, Nevada State Athletic Commission, Osterman. It is what it is. He's been, missing from action for some time. And now Kyler Phillips gets a big-time opportunity against one of those guys, the former RFA champ, Jaime Barcelos. And we made a whole video about Jaime taking a fight not that long after getting knocked out, but not that far away either. I mean, the fight that he was supposed to have against Miles Johns back in June. Johns out of that fight. No dance partner for Howney, so ultimately he gets to move it forward and take on Kyler Phillips. And that's great for your brain health, not necessarily for a guy that's 36 at 135, for anybody. But a good opportunity in this one, because for Haoni, you know how good the striking is. The Muay Thai, the leg kicks, they're awesome. He's trained with Pedro Hizo for the longest time. He trains with, who is it, Davi Hamosh, his jiu-jitsu coach at Atos BJJ over there in Rio. And you can see it here. I mean, that's a crazy gym. Adolfo Vieira in some of those pictures on the Instagram for Kyler Phillips MMA Lab at 135. Sean O'Malley is going to fight Aljamain Sterling. So this one should be an awesome fight, because for Barcelos, I talk about it every single time, Haoni Barcelos fights. Who's his dad? Well, if you don't know his dad, his name's Laerte Barcelos. And why do I say that? Because dad was a wrestling champ down in Brazil. Haoni was a wrestling champ in Brazil. Haoni was a jiu-jitsu champ before he got into MMA. Haoni's one of those guys that if he could go back into a time machine and when he was 23, 24 years old, you said, hey, get to the States, fight a lot, get into the big promotion, or get yourself noticed. Maybe it's a Walid Ismael or a Lucas Luckus or somebody that could have fast-tracked Haoni into the UFC like 10 years sooner than he actually got in. Because maybe he did get in a little bit late, and maybe it has kind of worn on him a little bit. You saw him get finished in disgusting fashion by Umar Nurmagomedov his last time out. That kind of double clock, double cock, and it's over. He gets finished. He beat Trevin Jones, who was a shell of himself, so it seemed, in that fight. Losing to Victor Henry, who came in on short notice. Losing to Timur Valiyev, who just lost to Brad Katona. Like, that really happened. So some crazy stuff there, but when I do look at this one, I don't want to discredit the age too much for Barcelos, because if I'm not mistaken, I picked him to beat Miles Johns not that long ago. But when I do look at a guy like Kyler Phillips, my question is, remember the fight that he had against Haoleon Paiva? I mean, I know for Phillips, yeah, that one was kind of a chintzy decision, but the Marcelo Rojo fight, he looked amazing. That's a primary striker who struggles in the grappling and so on. You know the fight against Song Yadong that he won. Cameron Els, it was too much too soon, and that fight did not go well for Els. Gabriel Silva, he got the win. Where is Gabriel Fly Silva, the younger brother of the forever prospect Eric Silva, and so on and so forth. But, and of course, former common opponent Victor Henry, both those guys with losses to him. But when you do look at this fight, I mean, for Kyler Phillips, he's so dynamic on the ground to go along with a great striking arsenal. It's just, for Haoni, where's his durability at? I agree with Raw Torque. Well, not necessarily that comment. Brad Katona is a guy from Winnipeg. He's been in Ireland forever. You're going to pick up the accent. I'm completely fine with that. But Prince Vegeta-san, Barcelos looks like a great value Jose Aldo. Kind of fights like it too. Unless he decides to grapple a little bit more. So if you do look at this one, I mean, Phillips is really tough out for anybody. We know that. He was originally supposed to take on Rafael Assuncao. You had the Nevada State Athletic Commission stuff. The fight falls out. Assuncao fights Davy Grant. And the rest is history, ladies and gentlemen. So I do have a hard time with this fight on my own. So I'll have a quick look over on Tapology. You do have the favorite being Kyler Phillips in this one. You have a look at the Tapology votes. 1,690 of them. 83% for Kyler Phillips. Majority by decision. And 75%. Of the 17% that have Barcelos to win by decision. You have a look at Matt's pick. Matt's pick on this one, he's going with Kyler Phillips to get the win. I like the length of a guy like Kyler Phillips, which he actually doesn't have a crazy advantage when it comes to his height. But you see that reach advantage. And if you can make a guy miss, that is a big differential. Kyler Phillips is a guy that strikes quite a bit from the outside. The thing that scares me about Kyler Phillips in this one, and it does a little bit against Almabayev earlier on in the card, Almabayev's got great spin kicks to the body and to the head, but just like his punches, Almabayev leaves himself out there. And if you miss big, sometimes you can get cracked big too on the return, especially on a pullback, and Kyler Phillips could leave himself susceptible. He's been out for a very long time. The last time that we saw Kyler Phillips, and again, it has been a while. He beat Marcelo Rojo way, way back in February of 2022. So for Phillips, still a young man, trains at a great gym, but this is going to be a really, really stiff test in Haoni Barcelos. So an awesome fight at 135. I love this one. Both of us going with Kyler Phillips in the fight. And we move it forward to an awesome one at 155 pounds. Chile's Ignacio Bahamondes taking on Ludwig Klein. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Ignacio Bahamondes. I mean, this was a guy that was bred to be a martial artist. His dad taught the martial arts. Ignacio liked the martial arts. And it was kickboxing that was the first love. It was kickboxing that got him to the dance. And if you do look at it for Bahamondes, 35-0-1 as an amateur kickboxer. He was a Chilean national champion at the age of 14. And we've seen this progression from Bahamondes where he used to get caught, he used to leave himself out there, and he fought a stiff level competition because he moved to the States, you know, at a really young age and started to get it done. He got submitted by Preston Parsons years ago at 170. Then he moved down to 155. His last fight was catchweight at 160. He had that loss to Matt McKeon where he got submitted. He lost to Salvador Becerra way back in 2019. And then that UFC debut, after looking amazing against Edson Gomez back on Contender Series 2020, he loses to John McDessie by split decision. How that was a split decision, I will never know, because John McDessie pressured him, put it on him. Bahamondes was wearing the damage. So I wasn't sold on Bahamondes. And all of a sudden, I was super high on him coming into the UFC. I was really low on my fellow East Coaster, John McDessie. And then all of a sudden, my brain was scrambled. So now I've had to individually break down all of Ignacio Bahamondes' fights, and there's been three since, and they've all been wins, and tried to figure out this pattern. So he takes on Roosevelt Roberts, and he has one of the knockouts of the year. 2021's knockout of the year, the wheel kick knockout. Roosevelt ends up over on The Ultimate Fighter, and that is what it is. And Fight Hive saying live, he just ignores our stupid comments most of the time. You have no idea how hard it is to do a live show for hours on end with all this knowledge that some of it's written down. I'm trying my best, fellas. I'm trying my best. I'll do my best to do it over in the chat, but sometimes it's tough. When you're the Charlie Montoyo, real manager jersey, trying to manage this sucker, it's not always the easiest thing in the world. So when you do look at this one, I mean, for Ludwig Klein, his last time out, he takes on Jai Herbert. And I mentioned this a lot, and I know Matt did as well when Herbert fought here a few weeks ago against Farazim, and it doesn't matter that we were split on the pick in that fight. That's neither here nor there. You look at the final scores in that fight, and what were they? Well, point deduction in the third round due to a low blow for Jai Herbert. The final scores in that one, well, Herbert would have won the fight. 29-27, that was one of the scores in favor of Herbert. The other two were 28-28. So two of the judges gave the second round to Klein, and Herbert would have won the third if he didn't lose a point. So it's crazy to see that, like, Ludwig Klein was losing a fight against Jai Herbert. And that's not that bad, but that's a long-rangey boxer. Bahamondes is a long-rangey fighter, and I know Matt's talked about this in the past. He's really long, he's really rangy, but when he boxes in a phone booth, and when he kicks, it can be from miles away because he is such a big guy. And he's got that James Vick to him. 6'3 at lightweight isn't something that you see all that often. So a good opportunity for Ignacio Bahamondes, who's absolutely on a climb. And for Ludwig Klein, I've already mentioned this twice now. You go back through this card and you look at folks that throw spinning attacks that leave them out there. Well, Ludwig Klein, what do we know coming into the UFC? Crazy spinning back fist, crazy spinning kicks that he can throw to the body and to the head. And then when he's taking on Smoking Shane Young, he's landing the kicks that everybody told you about. Paul Felder mentioned it before the fight, and we're off to the races for Klein. Now, I thought Klein was going to go on a crazy run at 145, and now he's an undersized lightweight, even though he's full of muscle out of Slovakia. But when you do look at a guy like Bahamondes, trains with Bilal Muhammad, trains out of the Chicago area, you had a Chicago guy makes UFC debut last week in Darius Flowers, and it didn't work out for him against Jake Matthews at 170 on short notice. However, when you look at Ludwig Klein, I'll be interested to see if those long-range kicks, I know they're speedy, but sometimes they're long-range kicks. And against a kickboxer that's been doing it his whole gosh darn life, they could be a little bit difficult for Ludwig Klein. So a big-time fight, a big-time matchup in this one for Klein. 2-2 in the 5-on-in. I'll give you that graphic right here. The loss to Mike Trezano where the wrestling didn't get it done and Trezano was able to get it done on his own. Nate Landwehr submitted Klein. Devontae Smith was a split decision win. The Mason Jones win is one that ages really well. I know Jones just won over with Cage Warriors in his return. But for Klein, when he mixes his martial arts, he's very, very good at a Spartacus gym in Slovakia. So Klein's a tricky guy. Bahamondes, I've been low on him, and I will admit that. I feel like I still have this bias, even though I go back and I watch some of that fight tape. But yeah, I do have a hard time with this one. And the submission loss for Bahamondes early on in his career, but maybe that could rear its ugly head because if Klein, again, mixes martial arts, this could make it for a tough fight. Over on Tapology, total votes on this one, 1,797 votes. 90% Bahamonda, 68% by decision for the 10% that have Klein, 65% by decision. I have a look at Matt's pick on this one. He's going with Bahamondas. I don't know if I've taken Bahamondas to win a fight, but I'm going to take him to win this one. I did not have him to beat Trey Ogden. And for some gosh darn decision in that fight against Trey Ogden, Derek Cleary gave the second round to Ogden. And I don't know if I've... like, I look at these things before the fights, and I watch the fight, and I have no freaking idea how he scored that second round for him. So I think it's a little bit wild, but yeah, for me, going with Bahamondas, Matt going with Bahamondas as well. And we have some big time fights on this one. Matt doing that European swing. Yeah, check him out at Fight Night Picks, or sorry, at Matt Allen FNP. You can check him out on his Instagram. He's got some fun stories. Looks like he's living it up over there. For me, the vacation not that long ago, going to TO, running through the six with my woes. All right. Some big time fights in this one. The next one, Canadian Tanner Boser taking on Alexa Kammer. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Pay Tanner Boser his sponsor money. Like, if Tanner Boser needed a spokesman, it would be John Malkovich in the movie Rounders. And everybody loves that movie. It's one of my favorite movies. I know Matt likes it, and if he was here, hopefully I could get a rise out of him. But pay this man his money, because for Tanner Boser, I think we've all seen the interview that he did with James Lynch where it was almost over and he was cool with the sponsors that pay him. Like, it's like Death Row's the record that pays me. But he was not happy with the Rock shoes and so on and so forth. The things that are on the shorts. He likes Venom, but the rest of them he doesn't like. So when you do look at a guy in Tanner Boser, he made that trek out his last time out. And you can see it on the screen. 203 pounds. And I did a deep dive on his move down to 205 because he hadn't fought there since 2014. The fight that he had against Iwan Kutsalaba was back in April. And everybody and their gosh darn dog had Tanner Boser to win. And if you don't think I have receipts, I have receipts. 4,469 total Tapology votes, 70% out of Tanner Boser. So when you look at a guy like Boser, fans have him to win. He's moving down to 205. He's a light space, pause. I shouldn't have to say it, but you do. He was a lighter heavyweight, like 229, 230, in around there. So for Boser, he makes it down. He's eating deer meat. He's hanging out in Berta. I assume he drives a truck, but I don't know that part of it. So he loses that fight against Iwan Kutsalaba, protested the stoppage a little bit. He's deleted his social media since. He's focused a lot on his camp. He mentioned to James Lynch he got back into bouncing on the weekends. So, you know, some stability there, and at least you can kind of pay for things because you're not getting your full purse. You get the show money, but you're not getting the win money. And now he's taking on Alexa Kammer. And Kammer has been away for over 2 years. And you might think to yourself, well, where's Alexa Kammer been? So I listened to an interview that he did, and it came out on July 10th with JHK, All-Star MMA. The guy does the best interviews. Wouldn't have had him here at Fight Night Picks doing interviews if he wasn't the best. He does the best. 2+ year layoff because of hand atrophy in his left hand, nerve damage. There was quite a bit of tingling there, and he mentioned it was due to ulnar nerve damage, so he had everything cleaned up. It was his jab hand. He's been training hard for the fight. Obviously, and I say obviously, you might not actually know Alexa Kammer if you don't remember him from a couple of years ago, but Kammer is one of those guys. His boxing was on point. He was a Stipe Miocic protege at light heavyweight. He was getting all kinds of wins. He comes into the UFC on Contender Series. He had a flying knee knockout of Fabio Chiarot. And that was awesome. And then Kammer's going out there and beating guys that you kind of expect them to beat. And that is not just Chiarot, but Justin Ledet, a guy who had great boxing, great speed at heavyweight, but it didn't translate to late heavyweight. So he gets the win over Ledet. He loses to William Knight because he gets out grappled. And then he loses to Nikolai Rianu. And in that one, they mix it up. It's a split decision loss. You could argue either way. Nikolai got it done with the wrestling. Kammer got it done with a little bit of striking. But when you do look at it in this fight, I mean, for Kammer, he's got the boxing. If Boser can mix it up, he's got really good kicks that he doesn't necessarily utilize all that well. I might reel that one in a little bit. If he uses them often and early, Boser's a really quick kicker. And he's one of those guys that can keep his defenses up, throw the kick, and he's in and he's out. He always had that speed at heavyweight. wrestling. It got tested when he was over with ACB, but for what it is, it's not that bad. Now, when you do look at it, Matthew Bartoli saying peekaboo from Calgary. We've got a Bozer is a nothing burger personified. I don't know about that. Talking about rounders. Yeah, John Malkovich. I mean, he is such an actor, John Malkovich. So if you do look at this fight, I mean, for Alexa Cameron, it is, how's the speed? How is that hand? How is the ulnar nerve? Because, listen, if you know UCL injuries, look at R.A. Dickey. I mean, he's a hard-throwing pitcher out of college. UCL injury. Has all these years. He's got to reinvent himself. End of his career. Wins a Cy Young in 2012 with the Mets. And then, right after winning a Cy Young, he gets traded to the Blue Jays. And it is what it is. But for Alexa Cameron, I'm eager to see how he makes in this one, or makes out in this fight. And I'm eager to see what you guys think about this one. If you could toss me a like on a Wednesday night, it would certainly be appreciated. So, a really tricky fight in this one. Obviously, Cameron hasn't fought in a very long time, whereas Bozer is a very, very active fighter in this division. And a lot of people thought he was going to go out there and get the win over... Ivan Kutsalava's last time out. He got dropped by a right cross, and they don't count it as a knockdown, but he gets dropped down. The fence kind of saves him. He pops back up, and you have the fight going down to the mat and kind of up again. But Kutsalava ends up getting the win. 1-4 in the last five for Bozer. Arlovsky is a loss where at first I thought Bozer won. The next four times I watched, I thought Arlovsky won. Latifi was a split decision loss where he gets taken down and held down. He beats OSP in tight. Gets a knockout win there, loses to Nascimento by split. He lost that fight, but he certainly lost to Kutsalaba. Bozer is favored in the matchup, -180. Over on Tapology, 1,748 total votes. Two-thirds at Bozer, the other third with Cammer. I do have a hard time. I mean, fight high, 27 years old, been off for 2 years. These young guys coming off layoffs, coming back better. Hoping that Cammer has improved. Mad in the fight going with the Canadian Tanner Bozer. Not to be a contrarian, but I do edge the younger guy in this one. Now, the one crazy thing is, you got a guy with 31 pro fights who's taken on a really high-level competition outside of the UFC, and a high level in the UFC as well. You got a guy with 8 pro fights. He hasn't fought in 2 years. Doesn't seem like a smart one, but for me, I will go with Alexa Cammer. So split on the pick in this one. Matt going with Tanner Bozer. I'm going with Alexa Cammer. Few fights left and another Canadian. It's the return of the Mac. The governor, Gavin Tucker, taking on Diego Lopez. Love this fight. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Ooh, Diego Lopez. He is the talk of the town because what happens? Lando Venata taking on Tony Ferguson years ago. Venata drops Ferguson a few times. Forget about new Ferguson. Forget about the one that you've seen lately, but... I mean, you had Lando Venata on a giant pedestal. Giant pedestal. He looks amazing on short notice against Ferguson. And the career's been kind of 50-50, wishy-washy. He's had a couple fights against Fight of the Nights against Bobby Green. And that's good, because Green looked good against Ferguson his last time out. But there's always fighters that automatically, look at that, through the gate, this guy is a star. Because he looked amazing against a top 10 fighter in Mavzarev Loyev on day's notice. And Lopez, I mean, if it's like one of those guys that you're like, that guy got Hall of Fame votes. Diego Lopez is getting those Hall of Fame votes. He really is like getting those top tier quarterback votes if you're on the Ryan Russillo podcast. Like, Diego Lopez is that hotness because of how good he looked against Mavzarev Loyev. But Matt and I talked about this quite a bit. And if you guys aren't getting your Matt Allen fix, I'm going to throw it on over to a clip of us talking about Diego Lopez about to make that debut against Mavzarev Loyev, because we were high on this guy coming into the UFC. Diego Lopez beat 3 UFC vets before he even fought on Contender Series. And I hate to break it to you folks, he finished all 3 of them. Like, this guy is incredibly impressive. And you might recognize him out of the Champ Camp Lobo Gym with Irene Aldana. You were talking about Alessandro Costa that's now in the UFC, but I say Champ Camp because Alexa Grasso is kind of the poster child for that camp now. But Matt, when you look at a guy who has a John and Kate +8 flow in the front and occasionally a little bit of salad out the back, Diego Lopez being a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt and having gotten into Jiu-Jitsu at 5 years old, this is a guy that's going to be billed as a specialist in that discipline. He has, what, 19 of 21 wins by finish, but I mean, 8 of them are by knockout. When you watch him use his hands, and I'll go through some of these fights, oh boy, does this guy ever have some hands? Like, he is a lot of fun to watch.
He does have a lot of nice strengths in his skill set. You bring up some of the grappling, and he does have great grappling. A really control-heavy fighter, too. Like, he does seem to have quite a bit of weight to him. Not just someone who is fishing for submissions constantly, but he does have great power on his feet, too. And we talked about some of the boxing combinations before we started to film. He has a great left hook. He has good body shots. The only thing, though, that I don't love about him on the feet is, at long range, there's not a ton of kicks to really close that distance. And he's not throwing a ton of volume like a Calvin Kattar guy or like a Max Holloway, to where he could really overwhelm you on the feet. That's the one thing that did stand out in some of his fights. Yes, he is having success in the striking, but there's some times in his fights where there's a minute, 90 seconds that go by where him and his opponent are both just kind of staring at each other in the mirror. And yes, he does have a lot of experience, which is nice to see, but I will be very curious to see if that kind of a game plan or that kind of a style is going to work against a guy like Evloev, because it is almost a disservice, because let's just be very honest about this right now. Anybody fighting Movsar Evloev with any kind of notice is up against an uphill battle, right? Like, this is a ranked fighter in one of the best divisions in the UFC. So hopefully Lopez can just give us a really solid fight. But this is one of those really difficult situations to throw him into, where I think we do have a very promising young prospect who can make a lot of improvements and continue to get better. But they're doing him no favors at all, bringing him in on short notice to take on Evloev.
He's 28 years old, and I mean, he's what, 21-5? He's not a prospect anymore. This is a fully seasoned professional fighter and a coach out of a big gym now. So I'm not going to call him a prospect in any terms, but I do agree with you in a sense. You know, we've seen it out of some of these fights, his fight against Glenn, his fight a little bit against Rodriguez with Lux in his last time out, where there were periods where he wasn't necessarily as active. But if you go back and you watch the fights leading up to Contender Series, the guy was absolutely wild on the feet. Look at that he had to Joe Anderson Brito. So go back to that fight. They're at par going into that one because Lopez had beaten a much higher level of competition than Brito had. You go into it, they strike, they get a little bit wild, and then Brito gets the takedowns. But what happens? I mean, Lopez off his back is threatening Kimura sweeps. Then he goes for the arm bars. He nearly has a guillotine in the second round. And in the second round at the start, there's a little bit of a warning from referee Tyone. Hey, watch out for the eye poke. And then in the third round, what happens? One single jab, I guess wrong hand, jab by Lopez and an eye poke from Brito. By rights, you would assume that that was going to be either a no contest or disqualification. They don't go to disqualification. They go to a technical decision. And on all three judges' scorecards, round one, round two, Brito, round three, because one punch was thrown by Lopes. So Lopez gets the round. But if you do look at it overall, he goes over with Fury. He fights for a title against a guy that you might recognize in Nate Richardson. I thought it was a really close fight. I know 48-47s across the board, and it was split 2-1 to Lopez. But if I did watch it, I mean, I thought the first three rounds, I thought for sure that Lopez had won two of them, kind of playing into a three-round atmosphere here. You look at his fight against Glenn. He drops him with a combination where he goes uppercut, left hook, and he drops him. And then to finish off the fight, I mean, you're talking about combinations on a leg kick attempt from Glenn. All of a sudden, he throws his right hand out there to meet it. And he throws his right hand a lot like Jared Gooden does at welterweight, where it's kind of, it comes out and he paws with his fist as he throws it. He drops him. It's over. He finishes up with some hammer fists. And then again, in the fight against Rodriguez, it was that right straight, the hammer fist. So you look at a guy like Lopez, all of these finishes, again, forever going to be slept on. And when you compare him to a guy who's ranked 10th in a Shark Tank of division. So when you do consider this matchup, this is the really weird part about it. I mean, you look at a guy like Diego Lopez. We talked about some of his striking, but if it's not all there, it's not all there. And you look at the way that he was able to perform against Evloev, he looked like he was lights out. And again, for Gavin Tucker, you look at that debut that he had against Sam Cecilia. And I really do wish that Matt was a part of the video a little bit more than just that clip from the last time we talked about Diego Lopez, because we were in the building for Gavin Tucker's UFC debut in 2017 against Sam Cecilia. And I'm not being hyperbolic, and I'm not trying to oversell it. That was the loudest pop I've ever heard in my life for somebody. And he's out of Western Newfoundland. He trains. He lives in the HRM. He's out of Dartmouth, and he's training at, and I'll bring it up right here now, Tower One Combat Sports. He's been a Titans Athletics guy for a while. Obviously, people know the Halifax scene for MMA. I already touched on it. John McDessie, TJ Grant. There's been some really big fighters out of Halifax, and Halifax has had big cards. I mean, you remember the main event of the card that Tucker debuted on. That was, look, I got props for this. That was Derek Lewis taking on Hoppe. You had Travis Brown and Derek Lewis. That was the main event of that card. Rory McDonald took on Tarek Saafedean years ago. David Shaw of the UFC talks about going back to Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada, and Halifax regularly enough. So when you do consider it, I think it is pretty cool that way. Gas Gas saying, hey, I got an idea. Craig Matt, why don't you pre-record the show, then play it live so we could chat about it together? I've done that before. Those are premieres, and people get all crossed up. They don't know if it's live or premiere, so we'll do it live, and sometimes we do it that way as well. But when you do look at, you know, Gavin Tucker and the way that he gets it done, it's his speed and it's his power. And if you want to see really good Gavin Tucker performances, the Sung Woo Choi win, who's gone on a bit of a run since, the Justin James fight, and then when Gavin Tucker beat Billy Q, he was on fire. That was his best performance. Now, that fight was years ago. That was UFC 256, Figueiredo versus Moreno. Their first fight, that was December 2020. Tucker comes right back. He takes on Dan Ige. And in that fight, Tucker is a slight underdog. He loses it. And he's been rumored in a couple of fights against Pat Sabatini. One in 2021, one in 2022. And I know he was rumored in one this year. And none of those fights could materialize. Matt and I saw Gavin Tucker at FLA, Fight League Atlantic, number 2 in Moncton. And I tweeted about it, October 16, 2021. He cornered his teammate, Mathieu Tarantini. Tarantini did not win that fight. But when I look at a guy like Gavin Tucker, it is the speed. I wouldn't necessarily look at those submission wins in this fight. I know he's got 6 of them, but I wouldn't anticipate him getting it done by submission against the jiu-jitsu coach at Lobo Gym MMA and a guy who's like legit and credentialed on the ground. So when you look at it for Tucker, how far has he fallen off? How bad have the injuries been? And at 37, does he still have the speed that he used to have at this weight class? And for Diego Lopez, can he just not get hit? I mean, is he able to kind of dictate some of this one? Austin Laxon hanging out there in the chat, having a good time. But yeah, I think this is a tricky one because of the layoff with Gavin Tucker. I can't wait to see him back. I mean, like, people around here get excited for a Gavin Tucker fight, being a local guy out of Atlanta, Canada. And I myself, selfishly, because of that connection with you, the debut in 2017, I get really excited about it too. Matt in the fight going with Diego Lopez to get the win. Tucker's one of those guys. I mean, again, if he beat Dan Ige, and I picked him to beat Dan Ige, I thought Tucker was going to go on a run to the top 15 of 145 pounds. It never happened. And now with the layoff, 1,791 total votes, 77% Lopez, 55% by submission for the 23% that have Tucker, 75% by decision. And with Lopez, if you really want to, you know, critique a fight that Gavin Tucker had years ago that he might not have looked his best in, you look at the fight that he had against Ricky Glenn, he could not get it going. That fight was in Western Canada. So for me, I will go with Diego Lopez as well in this one. But if Gavin Tucker, you know, wins and I have to eat some crow, I'm absolutely fine with it. Because when that guy is on, he's a five-tool player. And Gavin Tucker is a really special athlete. And he's a Joe Rogan favorite as well. So I think this fight's going to be an awesome one. Both Matt and myself going with the Brazilian out of Mexico in Diego Lopez to get the win. Mr. Salad in the front, Party in the front and back. Lopez to get the win. Next fight on the card, 205 pounds. They need stars. We have Dustin Jacoby taking on Kenny Nzechukwu. Just outside of the rankings. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, we always say. Let's get into it. Ooh, boy. Clicked on the wrong one. So listen, these things happen when you go live and you don't even get a chance to fix them. So I'm going to go to the right fight. All right, so now we're there. We're live. We're at the right spot. And Dustin Jacoby's taking on Kennedy and Nzechukwu, this one at 205 pounds. And when I was kind of trying to think about this one in a vacuum, I tend to pick Dustin Jacoby to win all of his fights. Go back and watch the videos. I pick Dustin Jacoby to win. And I do not pick Kennedy and Nzechukwu to win fights. And what's happened lately? Well, Dustin loses that close split decision to Khalil Roundtree. Everybody and their dog that watched the fight thought that Jacoby had won. Roundtree gets the decision. Jacoby goes out against a professional, Azamat Mirzakhanov. Mirzakhanov's an absolute buzzsaw. He's ranked now. I wasn't necessarily on board. And we know how that fight turned out. Mirzakhanov gets the knockdown. I thought maybe it was a little bit of a fluke against Clark, even though I watched all the tape on Mirzakhanov and I liked him coming into the UFC. It's a long story. And I'm here by myself on a late night Wednesday night talking to you about this fight. But for Jacoby, maybe he's lost a step. Or maybe not. I mean, light heavyweight, you can get pretty old. I mean, 40-year-old Jan Blachowicz had a close fight against 36-year-old Alex Pereira. So we got to pump the brakes there a little bit on the ageism when it comes to these guys. But when you look at this matchup, Kennedy looks like he's found his groove. And we've all seen the performances. I know he has three losses, but we could even go down through some of his wins as well. The Paul Craig loss wasn't really on in some spots. The Darko Stuzic win. We got that win because Stuzic had, you know, point deduction or point deductions. The fight against Carlos Ullberg, loses the first round handily, rallies in the second. Danilo Marquez, the perseverance of, just like Derek Lewis, just get up. And that was what he was able to do. Dawoon Jung, in tight, got finished, wasn't a good look. Nikolai mixed it up with the wrestling, but most people had thought that Kennedy won that fight. And now you have Carl Robertson, where Kennedy looked great. Kutsalaba, where he rallied out of, you know, some of the bad positions, but, you know, Kennedy looked amazing. Kennedy really looked good his last time out against Devin Clark. So now all of a sudden, Nzechukwu's on this big swing up, a great uptick, and Jacoby's not really at the best part of his career. For Jacoby, we know the glory lineage. We know, again, Canadians, you know, taking on Simon Marcus over there in kickboxing. We know how good of a striker Jacoby is, and he strings his shots together, and he can throw in combination, and he can pitter-patter, switch his stances. I know I have him listed as orthodox, and I have Kennedy listed as southpaw, but when you look at a fight like this, like, if Kennedy's on, and he's zoned in, and Saifso's just yelling those directions, think about the coaching in this fight. You have, like, Mark Montoya out of Factory X. You have Saif Saud, two of the greatest minds in coaching. Texas versus Colorado, going at it. And you've had fighters mix it up between these two gyms, you know, in the past as well. So I think this is an awesome fight. But when you look at this one for Kennedy, if he's on, then the pick's Kennedy. Dustin Jacoby's pretty well on in most of his fights. And he had the threat of the wrestling to contend with in the combat ensemble of Azamat Mirzakhanov. And I remember talking about Mirzakhanov and his fight against Iwan Kutsalaba. A lot of Kutsalaba references because a lot of these guys have fought him at light heavyweight. Bozer fight as well. But when you look at Azamat taking on Kutsalaba in combat sambo, it's done with the striking. You saw the striking that he was able to implement against Jacoby. So I think this is an awesome fight. Anthony Smith saying a brawler versus glory kickboxer. I lean towards the pro kickboxer in this one. Kennedy's not a brawler, though. He can strike very well on the outside. And as you can see from the card there, I mean, 83-inch reach, like, that is absolutely crazy. So he's got 7-inch reach advantage. He's got the height advantage. But the counter to that is, well, does he use it? Not necessarily, because he was in a phone booth or in tight close quarters against Dawoon Jung, and it wasn't getting it done. Fight hype, closest opponent to Jacoby was Dawoon Jung. We know how that ended. So do I buy into the hype now? Am I convinced? Because I haven't been throughout the entire time that we made these videos. If you toss me a like in this one, it'd be appreciated. It's been an hour and 12 minutes of talking straight. I do have a tough time with this one. So it will be interesting to see what we get out of both these guys. Again, from Kennedy, last couple of times out, he was favored to beat Devin Clark. Yeah, against Iwan Kutsalaba, he was favored. He got a performance of the night bonus. He was favored to beat Carl Robertson. And in this matchup against Dustin Jacoby, wouldn't you know it, Kennedy and Zechku favored to get the win. Taking on a guy in a two-fight losing streak. But again, look at it through rose-colored lenses a bit. The votes on Tapology, 1,850 of them, 71% going with Nzechukwu, 64% by knockout for the 29% that have Jacoby, 67% by knockout. Both these guys have pretty darn good, you know, striking from the outside. But if you do consider it, both guys have pretty good volume. And where I was going with it was, both guys have decent cardio as well. So I do like that out of it. Kyle, can I get a summary of your picks by the end? Sorry, I just tuned in. Kyle, I do that on question mark kicks, but if this is your first time tuning in, I thank you. People skip to the picks anyway, and they don't give a hot frig about what I say. So yeah, if I do that, then nobody watches at all, and I might as well just write them all down and close up shop. I know that Matt in this one has Kennedy and Jechiku to get a win in this one. Maybe that this will get hot frig trending on X. I never thought I'd say that. I'm going to go with Kennedy and Jechiku in this one as well. But yeah, I do have a hard time because I always pick Jacoby and I never pick Jechiku. And these fights like this, I do have a hard time racking my brain on it. So some awesome fights in this one. Kyle, the Blue Jays jerseys keep me tuned in. I appreciate that from you. Yeah, it's an actual Charlie Montoyo jersey, if you can believe that. It was one of those team-issued ones. I couldn't pass on it. Not a big fan of John Schneider's doing the damn thing with the Jays right now, but they did get a win today. Let us know what you have. We got the co-main, the main event coming up. You are not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fightin' Apex. We always say, let's get into it. Co-main event, the former strawweight champ of the world. We have Bate Estaca, Jessica Andrade taking on Tatiana Suarez. Jessica Andrade is completely lost out in the ocean without a paddle, and she's lost her last two fights in impressive fashion for her opponents, losing Yan Xiaonan, losing Erin Blanchfield. Top flight competition taking on the Ultimate Fighter winner from seasons past. It's Tatiana Suarez, who made that re-entry to the UFC, taking on Montana De La Rosa, her last time out. Jessica Andrade, I was trying to think about this, and last weekend I was down in Halifax. California. You call it Halavegas. You can call it whatever you want, but I hit up Taz Records, my favorite store down there, and I picked up Pipes of Peace. You know, the Paul McCartney album. Why? Because I love a song on that one. It's slightly underrated when it comes to the entire discography of Paul McCartney and the Beatles, but you know the song Say, Say, Say out of 1983, and the second verse in that song is take, take, take what you need, but don't leave me with no direction. And Jessica Andrade is right there. She's got no direction at all. She's fighting at 125. She's fighting at 155. And yeah, I get it. Suarez fought at 125 her last time out. But there's a reason why. So let me throw it on over to you, a clip from Suarez before she took on Montana De La Rosa. You can get your fill of Matt Allen in this one. You pull yourself back to 2019. The last time that Tatiana Suarez fought was back in June of that year. And I'll show you the rankings right there. Suarez was at number two. She picked up a win over now Nina Nunes. And if you look at it, Matt, what do you think the number one song was back in June of 2019?
The Raptors won the title like that month. So I want to say Money in the Grave by Drake might have been popping then.
Old Town Road by Lil Nas X and Billy Ray Cyrus. The number one movie, Secret Life of Pets 2. So a big time win there for Tatiana Suarez, was ranked number two in the division. But she's had neck issues throughout her career. Now, that was one of those things. It derailed her Olympic dreams of being a wrestler in 2012. She was having some neck issues. They found cancer. So then she really kind of had to switch things up. Out of that, she then kind of found herself into MMA. Undefeated record as it is now. She wins the Ultimate Fighter season 23. But you look at the wins in the UFC. Win over Amanda Bobby Cooper. That was to win the season. She beats Viviane Pajeda. She beats Alexa Grasso, who's going to be challenging for Valentina Shevchenko's belt in this division. She beat Carla Sparza, took her down many, many times in that fight, and then, of course, gets the win over Nina Nunes. But again, for Suarez, multiple knee issues, multiple neck issues as well. I listened to an interview that she did about a month ago with Helen Yee. She kind of talked about that, but also she said in the past couple of years, like maybe one fight, maybe two fights at flyweight, then she's going to go back down to strawweight. When she talked to Helen, she said, probably just the one fight at flyweight, then I'll go back down to strawweight. So interesting to see what we get out of her in a matchup like this. Talked about the fact that she's kind of bulked up with her legs just due to the fact of, you know, rehabbing the knee, so to speak. So you know how good of a grappler Tatiana Suarez is if you've watched her wrestle. She's a two-time bronze world champion in freestyle wrestling at 121 pounds. And boy, like, if you just the fight against Carla Sparza. Sparza was a champ before that and became a champ after that. And she drubbed her in that fight.
This fight's going to look exactly like that fight if Tatiana Suarez is even 70% of the fighter she used to be. Like, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Montana De La Rosa, but again, I brought this example up many, many times. Tatiana Suarez, is a world-class wrestler. I think we can all agree on that. It was an illness that caused her to not go to the Olympics. If she is an Olympic-caliber wrestler, I think that's fair to say. Montana De La Rosa is a national wrestler just in America. And she's not even like a multiple time champion at that. Carla Esparza is one of the better women's MMA fighters we have ever seen. I know that's kind of wild to say, but she has won a championship on two separate occasions. Like, she is one of the more credentialed women's MMA fighters we've seen in a long time. And you know, she's won the majority of those belts and those fights, all with her grappling and her wrestling. And I'm glad you brought it up because that was the fight I really wanted to focus on. If Tatiana Suarez fights another pure grappler, That's how a lot of these fights are going to end up. Because here's the thing. If you're a primary striker who has really good takedown defense, you are going to test Tatiana Suarez because you excel at the one weakness in her game. We saw that in the Nina Nunes fight. That was something I brought up a lot. It was, hey, Suarez is going to look good, but if she doesn't get the finish, it's going to be a little bit curious to see how she looks in the third round. Because the one thing about Nina Nunes is, hey, she has great long-range kicks, and she has really good cardio at that weight class. Now, did Suarez struggle in the third round of that fight? Yes, she did. But I don't think Montana and De La Rosa is going to have the long-range abilities on the feet that someone like Nunes is able.
But for the Suarez fight that she had against Carla Esparza, a couple of side kicks, and then 25 seconds in, she goes for the first of 9 takedown attempts. She ends up with a finish in that matchup. And for Suarez, too, like, you talk about some of the gyms, whether it's Millennium MMA or it's been Extreme Couture for a very long time. You see who she's with on Instagram. Patchy Mix, that guy's a pretty good grappler.
Very.
And the crew that they have at Extreme Couture, and I know a lot of people, they're saying, oh, well, I'd like to see if Casey O'Neill fought Erin Blanchfield. Well, Tatiana Suarez is going to spend time training with Casey O'Neill at Extreme Couture, and Suarez has been there at Extreme Couture for quite some time, and I'll throw it up there. The last time we did a video on Tatiana Suarez, that was like 2 or 3 studios ago. You had short hair. Everything was different. The world was just a different place. But for Suarez, a good opportunity to try and right the ship, and we've seen somebody with a long layoff like this come back after years away from a dip. It was Tyson Pedro. And they gave him fights against Ike Villanueva and Harry Hunsucker before they gave him Modestus Bukauskas.
Was it Jarges Danho? Was he the guy heavyweight?
The man mountain, Jarges Danho, with a big win over Jorgen De Castro.
I'm proud of myself, remember that.
A good opportunity for Tatiana Suarez. She's a massive favorite in the fight.
All right, so when you do look at this fight, I mean, for Suarez, she takes on Montana De La Rosa. First round, 4 minutes, 26 seconds of control time. Second round, it's over, as Kenny the Jet Smith was able to say for Vince Carter. And you have Suarez going out there at 125. And what I said when I said a tune-up fight, it was a tune-up fight at 125 for Suarez. The tuner up to then go back down to 115 or natural weight class. And if you do look at her, I mean, it's crazy to think Suarez is the older fighter of these two because she's much less experienced in MMA. We talked about her wrestling pedigree. With Andrade, those last two losses in the rearview mirror, they don't look all that good. And the questions being brought up there in the chat, you guys are talking about Andrade's takedown defense and saying it's really bad. I mean, over her career, it's 73%. The most takedowns she ever gave up was against Valentina Shevchenko in her title fight at 125. And it was a bad night for her on that night. Blanchfield got the takedown at the end after getting it done with the striking. She gets the win over Andrade. That fight was back when? In February of this year, where she got submitted. You gotta look at it a couple of different ways. And I mean, for Suarez, how good's the striking defense? Well, I mean, I've seen points in her career, and we've talked about this with some of these primary wrestlers like Sajara Eubanks and so on and so forth. There have been periods on the feet where you sit there and you go, yeah, it's not the worst. But I mean, Nina Nunes was able to rally in their fight. And if you look at the judges' scorecards in that one, 29-28, 29-28, and 29-28, Nunes was slightly less in terms of the volume in the third round, but she made her strikes count. So if you do consider it, Andrade, the 5-round experience, and if it does get dicey as it goes on, this could be a really, really tough one. So again, it is much appreciated to hear what people are saying in this one, but I have the hardest time trying to pick this fight because for Suarez, the time away, the injuries, I don't love it whatsoever. Yeah, I have a hard time with this one. And Matt sent me the text and he said, what was it? Andrade has a great chance though, and he picks Suarez. So I think out of all the people that maybe aren't favored to win this fight, Jessica Andrade is probably the one where I sit there and I scratch my head. At Fight Night Picks in the community tab, 1,700 total votes, 71% of you folks going with Tatiana Suarez to get the win. I do think Suarez is going to get the win, but I don't love it. I mean, when Andrade took on Blanchfield, I took Andrade. When Andrade took on Yan Xiaonan, I came on this channel and I said, every time I pick Yan Xiaonan, every time, and people laugh at me. And in this one, I'm going to go away from it. And look what happened to me. I got it wrong. I do have a hard time. But for me, I'll go with Suarez, but I would stay away from this fight like your Chicago White Sox manager, bench guy, bench coach, Charlie Montoyo. Yeah, I don't necessarily love it, but I will go with Tatiana Suarez in this one. And then we get to move into an awesome impromptu main event. Corey Sandhagen taking on Rob Font, the live show with Fight Night Picks, doing the damn thing, 12:23 a.m. local. Let's get into it. Corey Sandhagen, 16-4, taking on Rob Font, who's taking this fight on short notice. It was announced on July 20th that Font would be replacing Umar Nurmagomedov. This is a catchweight at 140 pounds. As always, one half of your hosting duo, Craig Allen, Twitter, X, and Instagram, at Craig Allen, FNP. Matt Allen on vacation, much deserved. He never takes them. The kid grinds it out every single week. So listen, kudos to him, and I know he's having a good time. You can find him at Matt Allen FNP. When we look at this fight, it's an awesome one. Rob Font, every person and their dog slept on him his last time out against Adrian Yanez. And listen, I'm not going to peacock because I get picks wrong every single week. I've had one card in my whole life of doing this where I get every pick right. Once that happened, I get picks wrong all the time. I pick Rob Font to beat Adrian Yanez, and I got obliterated in the comments section. So now Rob Font's coming in to take on Corey Sandhagen. Font's this odd outlier where, does he fight for the title? No. Has he had fight of the nights? Yeah, he's had fight of the nights. Does he have performances? Yeah. These two guys combine 4 fight of the nights between them and 10 bonuses total. That's awesome. Con DeMercy in the comments section saying, Corey, easy. Jason saying, Rob could TKO, but yeah, I mean, if you look at it for Rob Font, we talk about boxers with a crazy volume advantage over everybody, 135, 145, and we talk about the Calvin Caters of the world, the Max Holloways of the world, and we never talk about Rob Font. Remember back when Rob Font was fighting Sergio Pettis. Remember back when Rob Font was fighting Marlon Moraes before Marlon was losing to guys you might have never heard of with PFL. Like, Rob Font went on this run where he beats Pettis, beats Ricky Simone. That carries a lot of weight, right? Remember Ricky Simone's fight against Song Yadong in a main event not that long ago? Rob Font and Corey Sandhagen have combined for 8 main events since 2020. These guys have been in the marquee. They've been in the limelight. So the 5 rounds don't scare me, even though Rob Font's taking the fight on short notice. Like, there's a lot of reason to love this fight because both guys can defend some of the takedowns. Both guys can throw unorthodox shots and then get clipped. Corey Sandhagen fought for that interim belt, didn't get it done against Piotr Jan. And so I guess, as people say, it is what it is. Jordan Heath saying, new guy. New guy. So are you taking the new guy in this one? I'd like to know. Gas Gas saying, by the way, came in late. Who did Craig and Matt have? Ode versus the new guy. Yeah, the new guy. But when you do look at a fight like this, I mean, Font with his boxing, it is so crisp. He can get it done in the phone booth. He can get it done at range. He made it a masterclass when he took on the former champ, Cody Garbrandt. He looked, you know, human against Jose Aldo. Didn't get it done. And against Marlon Vera, he got touched up. And in both those fights, they were tough to see. And that's why he wasn't favored against Adrian Yanez. So I do understand that one. But when you do look at a fight like this, I mean, Sandhagen just continues to get nasty in these fights. And Font was due Song Yadong. Fight falls out. Font gets this one against, Corey Sandhagen. Nurmagomedov's out. Font comes in. But you look at the last two fights. The Marlon Vera fight is... And again, I don't curse on this channel because we want to keep the monetization status. But let's look at those scorecards. Sal D'Amato, the voice of reason, 50-45 Sandhagen. Judge Chris Lee, 49-46 Sandhagen. Over the top rope, last week I said Evan Bourne. Rob Van Dam's talk of the town tonight with AEW. So I'll say Rob Van Dam. Rob Van Dam. Guy's got to point at himself when he does his name. Joel Ojeda, round 3, 4, and 5 Vera. MMA decisions 24-24, scoring it for Sandhagen. Judge Joel Ojeda, what are we doing, Papa? I didn't understand that at all. Big Ben Davis, Bane, doing it over on the Calabasas Fight Club. Kudos to him. Credit to him. With the guy that, said he could beat Demetrius Johnson. I didn't watch it, but I'm assuming they had a good time. When you consider it for Corey Sandhagen, who is a B-Shop guy, that's got to be said. And I just noticed that I messed up the Rob Font graphic and I left the name bar too long for it. But listen, we're having fun. We're all here. We're enjoying things. When you do consider it for Sandhagen, Ninja Elbows, Trap Lord saying that, really good volume, tough as a $2 steak. And we saw him lose to the now champ so quickly against Aljamain Sterling back in 2020. Lost in 1:28. He lost to TJ Dillashaw by split decision. Dillashaw, Killashaw, Dalla Dalla Billashaw, Karen Bryant. It'll be interesting to see what version of Sandhagen we get. Because if we get the guy that has a close fight against TJ Dillashaw, where most people thought that Sandhagen won, but it was a close fight. and we're arguing about it today. I can't wait to see it. And I do have, again, a hard time on this one. If we do have a look at Fight Night Picks, you guys do a great job here. Let's go over into the chat. I mean, 81% of you folks going with Corey Sandhagen. And if you have the opportunity to toss a like, hey, that's much appreciated too. We're not even over 100 likes right now. And I'm expecting us to get like 300, 400, 500 throughout the week. So listen, we're later on in the week. We got to get this done. It's late on a Wednesday night. I have a hard time with this one. I know the Matt Allen pick on it. And if we look in the community tab, 90% going with Corey Sandhagen. Matt has Sandhagen. I have Sandhagen as well. But Rob Font's got a great opportunity on short notice. And I had Font to beat Adrian Yanez. Why? Because Yanez, he can freeze in some of his fights. Corey Sandhagen, I don't see that much as much out of him. And Sandhagen's kind of a new age Ferguson in some of his striking. But he doesn't get dropped. He doesn't tend to get hit as much, but he doles out that same type of punishment. So for me in this matchup, I do have Corey Sandhagen, but some amazing fights throughout this week. I mean, 12 total on this card. I think Matt and I were split on a few of them.
But if there's two Canadians on the card, doesn't that usually make for a big-time success?
Yeah, it does, guy, way out there. It was funny when I started the video off that way. It's not as funny when they're set to play after a while. So that was kind of weird, but a lot of really good ones. Good fights to check out throughout this week. I'll have question mark kicks on Saturday. I'll recap the fights live. And if you missed anything, go back through, watch the videos again. But the craziest part about this is this fight card's awesome. I love it. Sandhagen, Font, the Music City. It's awesome to see the return there because the last time that they fought in Nashville was that Wonder Boy fight against Pettis. That was a great card. Before that, 2017, Cub Swanson, Artem Lobov was a real main event in MMA. And then, of course, co-main to that was Aya Quinta taking on Diego Sanchez. But if you do look at it, the next one after that, RDA taking on Vicente Luque. There's so many storylines on that one. And I'm going to do a Fight Night Picks video. Like, listen, here, let's get crazy. Make it weird. We're doing it live. I'm on the right-hand side. The graphic's on the left-hand side. That's never happened before. We're breaking the fourth wall. I'm going to do a whole new way to shoot the video next week. And you're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. But I'll tell you what. I put a lot of prep work into this one. And I'm going to, like, I'm not going to spill the beans. I put a video, a teaser out there on Twitter. My wife knows what I'm doing, and one of my friends knows what I'm doing. Not even Matt knows what I'm doing. So that's a big tease, but I hope you guys really enjoy it. I mean, listen, putting the work in and fighting Apex, and you always got to try and do some new things out there. So toss a like on your way out if you could. Enjoy the fights. I know you will. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it.